Judge Cochran, Judge Johnson, Judge Hooten, the Honorable Gene M. Cochran presiding.
Good morning. You may be seated. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Just take a minute to get settled here and then we'll get going. As you may know, we are now live streaming our oral arguments, so you will see some new technology in our courtroom to help facilitate that. We're also still making an audio recording of our oral arguments, and that is available on our website, usually within 24 hours of the oral argument. We have three cases on our calendar for today, and for the benefit of the recording, today is September 20th, 2023. I'm Judge Cochran, and on the panel with me are Judge Johnson and Judge Hooten. The first case on our calendar today is A23-0466, PSS Properties LLC versus North Star Mutual Insurance Company. Each party will have 15 minutes for your primary argument. Appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. There is a clock on the podium, which you should be able to see, and the podium is adjustable. Feel free to adjust that as need be. At the beginning of your argument, if you could please introduce yourself and the party you represent, we would greatly appreciate that. So, counsel for appellant, you can proceed when you're ready. Can you hold on 1 second?
Yes.
I'm sorry. I just realized I brought in the wrong file. I have to run and get the correct file.
I'll just adjust this one.
Okay. Thank you. You can stay there. Thanks. Very much. You can proceed when you're ready.
Thank you. My name is Adam Hagedorn. I'm the attorney for the appellant PSS Property in this case. We are here today because the district court erred when it denied PSS Property's motion to enter judgment and for prejudgment interest under Minnesota Statute 60A.0811. There's two main points on this appeal. One is that the district court ignored extremely relevant and on-point case law regarding this procedural situation. That was the Ridgewood Bay v. Auto Owners case. And then the district court also erred when it read a bad faith requirement into the Minnesota statute 60A.0811, which is not at all present in the plain language of that statute.
Well, could we go to the plain language? Because
yes.
It says here that an insured who prevails in any claim against an insurer based on the insurer's breach or repudiation of or failure to fulfill a duty to provide services or make payments is entitled to recover the prejudgment interest. And in this case, was there ever a judicial determination that there'd been such of a breach because of failure to make payments or because of a failure to fulfill the duties under the contract?
Well, when PSS Properties moved for judgment, there were no more factual issues. That was resolved by the appraisal process. This is the same situation that happened in the Ridgewood Bay case where the court then did enter judgment.
Yes. In the Ridgewood Bay case, there was a motion for partial summary judgment, and the district court did make a legal determination on the merits in favor of the plaintiff on the legal issues there. So in that way, the Ridgewood Bay case seems distinguishable. And getting back to Judge Hooten's question, isn't a judicial determination on the legal issues necessary for a party to be a prevailing party under the law?
When we moved for judgment, that the point of that is to make that judicial determination, and the court refused to enter that judgment.
Well, did you ever file a motion on the legal merits? I don't recall seeing that in... I don't recall seeing any motion for summary judgment in this case.
There was no motion for summary judgment, Your Honor. As soon as the appraisal process was demanded and held, that supplemented any fact-finding decision in the case. There were no more factual issues for the court to decide except for to enter judgment.
We're getting at our legal issues. In order to be a prevailing party, doesn't there need to be a legal determination on the merits of the legal issues in the case?
I disagree with that because the issue in this case is breach of contract. When North Star Insurance Company paid what they believed was the correct amount under the policy, they risked bringing a claim for breach of contract. That action was brought. The factual issues were decided.
If I could just stop you there for a moment. They paid what they thought was the correct amount, is what you said, correct?
They paid what they thought was the correct amount under the policy.
And doesn't the contract itself provide for, if there's any question about whether it's the correct amount or not the correct amount, you seek an appraisal?
That is one of the options to resolve the factual dispute over the valuation. However, the appraisal position here also allows the insurance company to deny the claim after the appraisal.
But that didn't happen here, right?
It didn't, but it.
And you
but
didn't,
it could have.
You didn't seek a legal determination on the breach of contract claim.
The breach of contract.
Not you, but your client.
There was no summary judgment on the breach of contract action. To answer that question squarely.
So, and the law regarding a prevailing party. Provides that a prevailing party in any action is one in whose favor the decision or verdict is rendered and judgment is entered. That's the Borchert case. And in determining that, appellate courts consider who has, in the view of the law, succeeded in the action. To me, the case law suggests that to be a prevailing party, you have to have a determination on the legal issues in the case. It's not, I think you'd agree that a case law establishes that an appraisal is not a legal determination.
An appraisal is not a legal determination.
So you agree with that, correct?
Yes, however, when North Star paid the appraisal award plus prejudgment interest under 549.09 without question, there's no more question on liability. There is no more legal question to be determined. Because they paid it plus the interest, and in
you
order
didn't
to get
have to request an appraisal, you could have proceeded with your court action without an appraisal, correct?
Yes,
your client could have.
The court action could have proceeded without an appraisal. We demanded appraisal. North Star could have also objected to the appraisal and said you already commenced your court action.
So, what case law suggests that precedential case law suggests that an appraisal by itself can be used to that a party can be a prevailing party based on an appraisal award by itself?
In the case law that's been presented to the court, none of the cases stand for that proposition. K&R Land Holdings does not stand for that proposition. Ridgewood Bay is that case. I know you prefaced your statement with precedential. But that is the case that would control this, because K&R Land Holdings did not involve this situation, and it didn't involve a breach of contract action.
But isn't Ridgewood distinguishable for the reasons I outlined earlier?
No, I disagree respectfully, because there is no difference in the procedural history of the case once it gets to the point where the appraisal is demanded. Coverage has already been conceded by the insurance company. The only issue that remained is a factual dispute over the value of the loss. That is held. And then judgment was entered, or should have been entered in this case. And if I can go back to Ridgewood Bay regarding the summary judgments and get into that a little bit, the issue in Ridgewood Bay was whether or not it was a summary judgment on which subsection of the ordinance and law provision applied, where one was limited to $10,000 and the other subsection was limited to the policy. That is the same situation, a parallel situation to what we have here, which is an underpayment under the policy. It's a textbook breach of contract action. And in this case, $220,000 more was awarded at the appraisal. That concludes the court action because North Star never executed their exercised their affirmative defenses on the coverage issues. North Star didn't deny the claim as they had the right to under the appraisal policy.
Is there case law kind of drilling down into specifically the issue of prevailing party under this statute, 60811? Is there any case law that kind of says how we determine prevailing party for purposes of this statute?
For this statute, I was unable to find any. The Borkard case, which provides for that, you know, the party that in the view of the law succeeded in the case, I'm summarizing, but... And in that case, when almost $250,000 more is awarded at the appraisal, that is prevailing.
And so, your position is that we measure it, perhaps based upon the positions the parties were in at the time of the commencement of the case, and then what the ultimate result is, without regard for sort of causation or whether the benefit received was ordered by the court as opposed to provided voluntarily by the defendant?
To tie that in, the court refused to enter in any judgment or make that determination when we moved for judgment. So that is part and parcel of the appeal, is the merits of the case have been decided by the appraisal. There is nothing left for the court to decide except for the prejudgment interest, and judgment should be entered.
And the appraisal, I think your position is that because you started the lawsuit at a time when you were owed a lot of money, you were paid a lot of money during the course of the lawsuit, therefore you prevailed in your action.
Yes, because the appraisal process decided all the fact issues as opposed to going to a jury or a bench trial.
And the appraisal could have been requested and done outside of the lawsuit, right? Before the lawsuit?
Under the language, the appraisal could have been demanded at any time prior to the lawsuit.
Well, what I don't understand is where's the breach? I mean, because I'm looking at a contract here, and it basically provides, you know, you can admit or deny coverage. Well, that's not an issue here. They admitted coverage. The insurance company admitted coverage. And then provided that there's a procedure whereby if you have a dispute as to the valuation, you can go to an appraisal situation, which the insurer did as soon as it was requested by your client, and then they paid it. So where's the breach? It sounds to me that the contract did exactly what it was supposed to do. And the insurer did exactly what they were required to do under that contract.
The appraisal provision is not a mandatory section of the policy. Every time an insurance company, this is no different than any time an insurance company underpays a claim, as it does in the Ridgewood Bay case. In that case, the same position could be taken, that they were following their contract language. But
yes,
they underpaid it.
Could your client have requested an appraisal at any time after the payment was made?
They could have.
By the insurance company?
Yes, that is one of the provisions in there, but it's not a mandatory provision.
But isn't that the provision that deals with these disputes on valuations, which frequently arise in any kind of insurance claim?
That's one of the ways that it could be done on this. As it approaches the 2-year policy suit deadline, the time to demand appraisal at any time is a gray area. I mean, that's not the issue before the court, but the Johnson case would prevent that from happening. The breach of contract action preserves all of Ridgewood or all of PSS Properties' rights under the policy.
But where is the breach? That's what I don't understand.
The breach is the underpayment of their obligations on the policy. If the policy says...
Can any court determine that constituted a breach of the language of any provision in the insurance contract?
In PSS Properties insurance?
Yes.
There was no determination on that. That was the purpose of the...
We're arguing it was a breach, but we don't have a legal determination that that was a breach.
The entry of judgment would have been the legal determination of that, which your court refused to do.
But you didn't file any motion or any legal authority to support that. In fact, I think, you know, the filing was simply a statement that everything's been resolved. The only thing that's left is the prejudgment interest.
The only issue that was left is the prejudgment interest because Northstar had conceded all of the other issues when they didn't exercise their affirmative defenses on the coverage or exercise their rights under the policy to deny the claim after the appraisal.
I'm reminded, I mean, this is not in the briefing, but I seem to recall from civil rights cases about the concept of the catalyst theory, that there are cases, I think maybe under Section 1983 or elsewhere, where the filing of the lawsuit may have not been the precise means by which the plaintiff obtained. Maybe there was a settlement, or maybe there was something else. May not be the means by which a remedy was provided, but it prompted. Here the defendant, is it correct in saying the defendant here voluntarily paid the additional amount, $207,000, after the appraisal?
They paid it without objection.
And without any judicial compulsion during, in the lawsuit. So there was a voluntary, as far as the lawsuit is concerned, you pleaded breach of contract, but without a judicial termination, defendant voluntarily made that payment. Maybe what you're telling us is that because you commenced the action, because the commencement of the action led to the payment, therefore you, and then it was incorporated into a final judgment, was it?
No judgment was entered, which is one of the reasons we're here.
Because there was, by that time, there was no loss, I suppose, or there was no...
There was a loss because
you had been compensated, though, by the voluntary payment, so there was nothing else to get except interest.
By that time, all of the factual issues had been decided because of the appraisal. I'm running low on time, but I would also point to the statute, that the statute goes beyond just a breach of the duties to pay. It's a failure to provide services or make payments. And that is what happened here when the insurance company underpaid the claim at the outset.
Thank you. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Louise Barrent, and I'm here this morning on behalf of the respondent, Northstar Mutual Insurance Company. The district court got it right, and this court understands what the facts are here. We have a loss that occurred in April of 2019. My client investigated it, paid what they thought was the value of the loss in June of 2019. I believe it was June 10th, 2019. And then nothing happened for 22 months. We heard the proverbial crickets until April 1st, 2021, when the plaintiff commenced the present lawsuit. Then the plaintiff, after that, in July 2021, requested the appraisal, which is, as Judge Hooten has pointed out, is provided for under the policy. It took about a year to marshal all the facts and to conduct that proceeding. And in July 2022, the appraisal panel came back with an award that was more than what we paid. We paid the difference between the award and what we had already paid in June of 2019, and immediately. And we didn't deny coverage at any time after that appraisal
was awarded. Counsel, by making that payment, did the insurer concede its liability under the policy and that it had failed to fulfill a duty to make full payment?
Well, Judge, I think the way that Northstar would put it is that it complied with its obligations under the policy. When the circumstances, as we just described them, occurred and the appraisal came down, there was no reason under the policy to deny the loss. I think that's what ultimately everyone wants their insurance company to do. When there's a loss, there's, as I think perhaps Judge Hooten pointed out, there's often a dispute about how much it's worth. But then that was resolved. North Star decided, looking at its policy, there was no reason for it to delay or to deny. So I suppose you could say it admitted liability, but I guess it admitted liability because the policy said it owed that money to its insured. But that does not constitute a breach. And back to the requirements of 68.0811, as this court has pointed out, it's very clear. Under subdivision 2, an interest, the interest is triggered by an insured who prevails in any claim against an insurer based on the insurer's breach or repudiation of or failure to fulfill a duty to provide services or make payments. And that needs to be read in connection with subdivision 3, which says this section applies to a court action or arbitration proceeding. There was no determination.
I'm sorry, could you what were you reading?
I'm sorry, that was 68.0811, subdivision 3, entitled application.
And okay, thank you.
And that needs to be read in connection with subdivision 2. There needs to be a court action determining a breach. And that
never occurred. There was a court action.
There was a court action, but that's all there was. There was not a court action determining a breach.
And where do you find the requirement about determining that the court must determine the breach or determine the, yeah?
Prevailing in any claim against an insured based on the insurer's breach. Prevail in a claim based on the insurer's breach, and then subdivision 3 says this section applies to a court action or arbitration proceeding.
Was there any proof of loss submitted prior to the filing of this lawsuit?
No.
So
the first time we received that,
proof of loss,
and I believe it was
the company received.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I'm talking over you.
The
question was there a proof of loss submitted before April of 2021? And the answer to that question is no. And I believe we noted that in our papers, and I think it was in the record as document number 31. We received that United Claims Service information at the same time that we received the complaint, which was on or about April 1st of 2021. There is no information in the record to say, again, that between the time that we paid what we felt was required for this loss on June 10th, 2021, and when we received notice of this lawsuit in early April 2021, that the insured was disputing, said we should pay, you know, thought we should pay more. And again, Judge Hooten, you're right. The appraisal clause in the North Star policy allowed PSS to request that appraisal at any time. There was no reason why they needed to wait 22 months.
Is there any other remedy set forth in the contract with regard to a dispute valuation, or is that the only reference to how you resolve that dispute in the contract?
That's, as far as I know, the only salient part of the contract. The other thing I wanted to point out was with respect to the issue of, I just wanted to make sure that we're all on the same page with respect to Ridgewood Bay, because I know obviously PSS thinks that case controls, but the facts, as Judge Cochran has observed, are different. We have a lawsuit that was filed. We have cross motions for partial summary judgment, the court determining in favor of the insured on that. Then they were too late under the policy to request an appraisal, but the parties, as a measure to establish the value of the loss, which was the only issue remaining, submitted the case to appraisal. Then after the appraisal, there was the judgment, and the case ended up here.
Well, did Ridgewood involve a coverage dispute?
Yes. And here's the reason, and I'm going to tell you why, because I'm going to cite you to a particular phrase within the Ridgewood Bay decision. This court said, quote, the judgment entered here concluded a court action involving auto owners' breach of its insurance policy. And that is at 2022 Westlaw 2195871 at pages 9 through 10. So that was a completely different case.
There was a legal determination as to a coverage dispute, correct?
In Ridgewood Bay?
In Ridgewood Bay.
Yes, yes, Your Honor.
And it was determined in favor of the insured.
Correct.
And but there is no coverage dispute in this case, am I correct?
No, there was not.
So the sole issue was the amount of the payment.
That's really what it all boiled down to, Your Honor. And again, the lawsuit was filed. PSS says in its reply brief that, well, North Star answered in and asserted affirmative defenses. Well, we may have policy defenses, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But a complaint followed by an answer is not a court action determining a breach. Section 60A.0811 does not say if you file a court action, then you get the interest that's allowed for under that statute. Again, it's very specific, and the court is aware what that statute says. Requires that there be a prevailing party with respect to a breach, repudiation, or refusal to comply with the terms of the policy in a court action, and that didn't occur here.
Now, if the insurance company had not paid the amount of the appraisal as they did, would that have turned this case into possibly a breach of contract case?
If North Star had said at the conclusion of the appraisal, okay, the amount is the amount, but we've got policy defenses, let's now litigate whether or not you're correct or we're correct. Then I think we're in a situation that would have ultimately yielded possibly a summary judgment motion, potentially maybe a trial with respect to whether or not there was coverage under the policy. But that didn't happen here.
No, I understand that. I'm just trying to understand what would arise to a breach. In other words, if they had said, well, we think we paid the right amount, we don't care what the appraisal is. How does that get resolved?
If there was a dispute as to the amount, it's my understanding with respect to the appraisal process, Your Honor, that under the case law as it's developed in cases like Quaid and Oliver and K&L Land Holdings and also the Johnson versus Mutual Service cases, the appraisal is kind of a unique entity in and of itself. It's not an arbitration. The appraisal panels do not decide coverage. They do not decide liability. The appraisal panel has blinders on, so to speak, and it only decides the value of the loss. And so it's kind of a unique animal.
It's not a court action.
It's not a court action. And again, you know, I stress again that subdivision 3 of 68.0811 talks about this section. This applies to a court action or arbitration proceeding. And the Minnesota Supreme Court recently held in the Oliver case that an appraisal is not an arbitration. Although that case was construing, I think it was the Minnesota Fire Insurance Statute under MnStat 65A, the principle is the same. It's a different animal. And again, the legislature specifically called out those two things, a court action and an arbitration. Differences between and among those things, but the statute is specific and it's not ambiguous. And I'll just mention.
So, in terms of the meaning of an insured who prevails, what case law do you think best guides the interpretation of that language?
There isn't any, I think I'll agree with Mr. Hagedorn on that, no precedential opinion of which I am aware that discusses the issue of prevailing party in the context of this situation. The Borchard case does discuss prevailing party, but again, that was in the context of a court action, so I'm not sure how that's going to fit here. But I do think that is important because it highlights the difference between what we have here and what happened in Borchardt. A court action, a party prevailed because they got some money on a claim. But again, so the difference here is this whole difference between arbitration, court action, and appraisals over here. The only body that decided anything was the appraisal panel, and the only thing that appraisal panel decided was the value of the loss. Again, North Star looked at its policy and said after the appraisal award came back, we think the policy requires us to pay, and they did. The situation works. That's the way that it's supposed to work.
Does this case require that we consider publication of this, I mean, and clarification of the law?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because I think there's some kind of some unique facts here that may or may not occur again. There are a number of cases. The K&L Land Holdings case is one of them. I think there was a recent decision involving a case called Anderson, in which it's a little bit different because you have an appraisal and then a party seeks confirmation of the appraisal award and an award as to interest, which is almost always requested under 549.09. And most of the cases arise under that procedural posture. The only thing that's different here, in addition to the fact that there's this 22-month period of radio silence from the insured as to the adequacy of our June 2019 payment, is that here, in an effort to, and I certainly don't fault PSS for this, to make sure that they weren't ultimately barred by the 2-year statute of limitations, they filed a lawsuit in April, days before the statute was going to run, to preserve their options. It seems to me like that's what they did. And then they demanded an appraisal. So it's a little bit different and it's a little bit backwards, but that doesn't mean that somehow, presto changeo, there was a court action that resulted in a court conclusion that there was a breach. That is essential to 60A.0811, and that did not happen here.
And you've said before in this argument that it must be a court action determining, and you're emphasizing determining, determination. That word's not in the statute, right?
That is true.
And is it in the case law? I mean, I'm just...
Well...
I understand the logic of it, but I'm mm-hmm. but I'm just wondering if that's part of our pre-existing law or if this is a requirement that you think we should impose in this kind of a situation where, you know, the appraisal is kind of embedded within the lawsuit, at least temporally, you know, at overlapping time periods. So I guess I'm wondering, you know, where does this the requirement of the court action must be the thing that determines something?
To the extent that I understand your question, Your Honor, and I apologize if I do not.
And I apologize if you don't.
It's my interpretation of the clear terms of the statute that to be a prevailing party in a claim against an insurer based on the insurer's breach, there has to be a determination. If the insured is going to be a prevailing party on a claim, there needs to be a determination that the insurance company breached.
And what's your authority for that? Where do you get
that? It's I think in logic and common sense and embedded within the clarity of the statute.
Because a breach is a legal term, right? It's not a fact determination by the appraiser.
That is correct. And again, I would cite to both K&L Land Holdings, Johnson versus Mutual Service, and another case called Vauble. And I see that my time is up. Can I just finish my sentence?
But to Judge Johnson's point, the statute goes on to say, and you can answer, breach or repudiation of or failure to fulfill a duty to provide services or make payments. So where is the requirement for a court determination in that, you know, reading that language as a whole?
Well, again, Your Honor, I think that the logic and common sense behind the way that this statute is written presupposes that to be a prevailing party, you have to win and obtain the court's decision. There needs to be a decision in the lawsuit declaring that there was a breach, repudiation, failure to fulfill a duty to provide services or make payments. And I don't think you get there unless there has been there isn't a prevailing party on that claim unless there is a decision on the breach. I don't see any other way to construe that statute. And unless the court has any other questions, I will just simply ask this court to affirm the decision of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. I want to pick up on that last statement there. In a situation where setting aside the appraisal that decided the fact issues here, if a party was to commence a lawsuit and then the insurance company had underpaid and then looked at the complaint and said, you know what, you're right, here's all the money that we held back, and that ends the lawsuit, and if that is the way to bypass the statute, that can't be the way that the statute is interpreted. If there's a payment made, because then at that point, under the arguments we've had today, there would be no breach, there would be no repudiation, there'd be no failure to pay, because there wasn't a court determination, because the parties conceded it. That can't be the meaning of this statute. And what we have here is a situation like that, except there was an adjudication under the terms of the policy that
isn't the language any claim prevails in any claim important, because a claim is something you bring in a complaint, and unless you have a judicial determination on the legal matter, I'm not sure. You raise a good hypothetical, but I guess I'm still wondering, you know, we might all think, okay, well, they agreed that they should have paid more, but without a court saying that there was actually some sort of legal basis that they had failed as a, you know, to comply with the terms of the contract, how can we say that the insured prevailed on a claim?
In this case, by the mechanism of the policy, which was the fact issue was there an underpayment on the claim? The appraisal panel came back and said the insurance company underpaid by $220,000.
That was an appraisal that's not a legal determination. We can all agree with that.
That is the appraisal that determines the fact issue, which then resolves the lawsuit because there is nothing else left to decide. But that lawsuit, this case involves the interaction of several policies and the function of North Star's policy. It shortens the time period to bring a lawsuit to 2 years. It leaves an open-ended time to demand appraisal. And then when the appraisal happens, and North Star doesn't exercise its defense to deny and says, oh, under the policy, I guess that was right, the court action is concluded, and the only issue we have left is prejudgment interest, and we have a $220,000 payment in the plaintiff's favor that should have been paid.
Isn't it? So the favorable result that you obtained through the appraisal, that's something you could have done without suing in court, correct?
Up until the point where that two-year deadline, suit deadline happens under the policy. Because arguably under Johnson, the insurance company could say no.
To Judge Johnson's point, your client could have requested the appraisal earlier.
That's correct. And North Star could have requested it when they received the proof of loss as well.
How much litigation occurred in the court action? In other words, was discovery done, documents exchanged, depositions taken, any motion practice? And so
there was no motion practice. Written discovery was exchanged, and there was North Star held the deposition of PSS Properties CEO.
And then was there any connection between that discovery and the appraisal process?
I don't believe it was a few years ago, and this is far outside the record, but the deposition, I don't believe, was used at the appraisal process. It was kind of the documents that had been exchanged to determine the valuation, and then there were witnesses regarding the damage that had happened to the building.
I mean, would you agree that it seems to me it would not be a good state of the law if a policyholder could file a court action sort of for the sole purpose of just qualifying for the enhanced interest rate under 60A811. In other words, we don't want to encourage or induce parties to file more lawsuits than necessary just for the purposes of getting more more interest, right?
That is not the, that was not the purpose of this lawsuit, but because it, the
and,
2 year
I'm just talking about future incentives and not looking backward at what happened in this case, but if we were to rule in your favor, I feel like it would encourage any time a policyholder wanted to request an appraisal to try to enhance the recovery on a claim, then they ought to first go to court, file a complaint, get a lawsuit started, then do the appraisal, because, you know, so that they could then trigger the attorney's fees, or the, excuse me, the interest rate on the back end. I mean that would be the result.
That could be the result.
I mean smart lawyers would respond to an opinion by doing that, right?
But it also depends on the language in the policy. There could be a limitation on when you can demand appraisal, which would stop that from happening, which was the case in Ridgewood Bay. It had a limitation that ended. This was open-ended, but there is no difference between those two because the appraisal was used to resolve the facts.
Okay, so maybe my question got lost, but, I mean, would you agree that would not be a good state of the law to have an opinion that encouraged lawyers to file lawsuits needlessly for the sole purpose of getting a higher interest rate?
If that was the sole purpose for filing it, as a plaintiff's attorney, I'm... It's not, if that's the sole purpose and you could resolve it through the appraisal, then that would not be the purpose of it. But the purpose is when you come up on a 2 year statute of limitations, then to preserve your rights, you have to bring that lawsuit. And in a commercial, I guess what's also not lost, I guess, is that this applies to commercial policies. It doesn't apply to all other policies. This is a specific provision for commercial policies.
Well, are you arguing that we should treat your client or someone like your client differently because you waited rather than requesting an appraisal more promptly?
There's no requirement about that. It needs to be requested promptly. That is the language. It says it can be requested at any time. That's the function of North Star's policy.
Mm-hmm. Right, and it seems like the policy was efficacious here. It led to a greater recovery on your claim, and the lawsuit seems more incidental.
The lawsuit had to be brought, though, because the 2 years from the loss was approaching. And if it wasn't, under Johnson, North Star could have said, no, I don't want to be part of this appraisal. And North Star would have had no remedy in which to compel it. Because
except to have asked for the appraisal earlier.
That is one of them. But that's also not one of the requirements under the policy.
Thank you for that clarification.
For those reasons, I ask that the court is reversed and remanded. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both for your helpful arguments here today. We appreciate your thorough understanding of the law and the case. We will issue our opinion within the statutory time frame.